Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast. We had a couple weeks off, and we're back at it. Got my buddy Alex across the pond, ready to dive into some pretty cool topics today. We got a lot on the docket, a lot of things happening in the crypto world in terms of positive movements and green graphs and all kinds of fun stuff that we haven't seen in a long time. So we're going to jump into all that, plus what's going on with the Goodfellas, and maybe even see what Alex is doing with his wedding. So that said, guys, welcome to my partner, Mr. Alex. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Right now, I'm quite confused because you changed the whole introduction, man. It looks like it's like season two is starting here, like different intro. But yeah, really cool. Everything is good on my end. Looking forward to chat again. It's been a while, as you mentioned, right? Like we left, I think, 1 or 2 weeks due to meetings and due to other stuff we had to do. So yeah, let's get right into it. A lot of stuff happened. We had a beautiful mint. We got utility tools that already dropped and some are yet to be dropped. And we got some stuff that happened in crypto. We haven't talked about crypto for quite some time now, so let's definitely jump into that. To some degree, it feels like it doesn't even make sense to speak about crypto because prices have not really moved in a significant range. But yeah, the news are still positive. I think it's like the market is behaving as it should. Obviously, we are in a bear market. We've been there since probably dropping below 100,000. And now we'll be here at these prices having the opportunity to accumulate more of the assets we want to have. I found a pretty interesting post today from a guy who made a little list and telling us how much revenue your favorite chain generated in the last 24 hours, which is, I think it was yesterday. And it's interesting to see because obviously those chains, you know, need to generate revenue in order to exist and to operate and to pay their employees. And we got Solana with like 50,000 in a day, which is obviously pretty good. A little surprise, Polygon made 67,000. I'm not sure why Polygon makes so much money. Not sure where that transaction volume is coming from. The comments say that it might be because of Poly markets. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of the prediction market, which is pretty popular among crypto people. A lot of usage. Many people trade and bet on that platform. And so Poly markets might be a big reason why Polygon is making a lot of revenue. But then there are other chains like Barra, for example, which is like $1 billion market cap chain making $30 in revenue per day. Plasma, never heard of them, $7. We got Hyperliquid, almost 500,000. Ethereum, 300,000. So it's crazy to look at these numbers because when we speak about crypto adoption and we speak about the big chains we use, obviously, the generated revenue is kind of an indicator of how many transactions you have on those chains. And did you expect Polygon to surpass Solana in terms of the revenue created?
With the popularity of the prediction markets, it's totally possible. I would love to see the breakout. I would love to see the transactions classified. So, like, if we could separate what Poly market created or what Polymarket contributes, that would be interesting. But until we have the actual data, it would be very difficult to know. So I'm not surprised by anything that's just raw, but if we get some sort of breakdown, I would be curious to see that.
Absolutely. And I think, I'm not sure if the news were legit or valid that I saw that Polymarket is actually planning to move to another blockchain. I'm not sure if that's true. If it is, we can actually see how much percentage of the revenue was created by them. But yeah, on the other hand, we have Ethereum, 300,000 versus 50,000 on Solana. Do you think that's due to the gas fees, the high gas fees on Ethereum? Because transaction volume wise, I mean, in terms of the raw number of transactions, Solana is way ahead.
Yeah, of course. I mean, transaction volume and transaction costs are going to be your two variables. So, of course, if you put those two numbers together, you can arrange them in any order that makes sense. And of course, if you are doing more transactions with a much, much less gas fee. I mean, the gas fees on ETH and Solana are not even close. ETH is obviously improved quite a bit since their proof of stake switch, but it's still way more expensive than Solana. So if you just multiply out the transactions, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there are some chains that were quite hyped in the past, especially in the last year or so. We have Monad, which made like $3,000. And Sui, back then, very popular, $1,000. And yeah, I mean, do you think these numbers indicate which chain might, you know, go the... How many chains have we seen that kind of quit it and you know, ended their operations? I mean, obviously, these people need to live. They need to make a living of something. They have employees. Do you think if a platform like, let's say, Plasma, which generates $7 a day, do you think that can sustainably survive in the future? Or do you feel like this is an indicator of, hey, if I got any Plasma, I should probably sell?
I think there's two different things you have to look at. And the lower tier players, I'm not even concerned with. Unless a lower tier player is coming in and they're really doing something unique, I don't care. Like, I mean, and that's just, you know, that's the way the market's going to respond to that as well. No one else is going to care either. So you just have to look at it from the standpoint of adoption and use cases. And then, of course, the dollars per transaction in terms of, you know, what can it fund? And then, of course, you have to look at the amount of infrastructure that has to be supported by the fees generated, right? And where those fees go. So just because a chain generates 50,000 or 100,000 or more in a given time frame, that doesn't necessarily mean that the team or, you know, the developers who are responsible for maintaining certain aspects of the chain are actually making that money, right? Like a lot of that money, especially in proof of stake, is going to go back to staking holders, right? Like that's where the transaction fees end up headed, right? So it's not just a simple number of, oh, the chain did XYZ in transaction volume or XYZ in total gross revenue in terms of tokens. It's where does that money end up, right? So I don't know enough about where the money ends up to say one way or another about what a specific organization or group needs. My guess would be that something like the Ethereum Foundation or Solana Foundation would basically hold enough of the token and be staking enough of the token so that the fees that they're earning just through staking would probably get them by in the short run. Now, long term, obviously, that's not sustainable. But in the long term, the idea isn't to live off of like staking rewards. It's to build applications and businesses that actually provide services people are willing to pay for. And so when I look at Solana, I see a lot of business adoption. And of course, the lower fees create a greater opportunity for use cases for businesses. Whereas for ETH, I think ETH is, you know, the original OG, you know, smart contract player. And ETH has more of a reputation in, like, I would say, like high-end art right now than I would say in business. Although there are a lot of finance applications built for ETH and around ETH, whether it's, you know, swap applications and this and that and the other thing. But when you look at institutional adoptions and businesses in the real world outside of like chain-based organizations, they're going to want the lowest fee and the fastest transactions, and they're going to want it yesterday. So that's why you're seeing the Solana adoption in that arena more so than ETH adoption. But that doesn't mean that you won't see ETH continue to grow or expand into like higher tier operations where people aren't necessarily as concerned about fees, right? If I'm buying a piece of artwork from Christie's, you know, and I'm paying a few million dollars for it, do I really care if ETH charges me $5 on the transaction? I couldn't care less. It doesn't matter. So these are the things that you have to consider. But as a business owner and as someone who's facing, you know, ever increasing, you know, like monthly service fees and inflation, I want to keep my costs as low as possible and I want to operate as lean as possible. So for me, between the two choices, if they both get me to the same place, I'm going to choose the one that costs me less. And in this particular case, that's Solana.
Looking at ETH, I don't know if you read the headlines, but there are more news about the Ethereum Foundation selling large amounts of ETH again, I think about 49 million. And do you think that this is actually, I mean, they have repeatedly sold Ethereum. Do you think that this is like a bad signal, basically showing a lack of confidence in its own asset? Because on top of that, we see, of course, less institutional demand for ETH compared to, you know, Bitcoin. Of course, we got MicroStrategy which continues to aggressively accumulate Bitcoin, and of course, looking at the last cycle, Bitcoin outperformed ETH, of course, and ETH. Did it get like a new all-time high? I think it did, but yeah, performed way worse than Bitcoin. And do you think all these things, like the Ethereum Foundation selling ETH, has any kind of impact on people's behavior when it comes to long-term investing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it has a long-term impact on like degen behavior, right? And it has a long-term impact on, I would say, I don't want to say institutional investors because there really aren't any outside of funds. Excuse me, but it's going to have a long-term impact on like the retail buyer for sure. Like the retail buyer looks at ETH and it's like, oh, well, it's been stuck at $2,000 for ages and eons. It even dropped down into like the low teens for a bit. It didn't run when the other assets ran. It didn't run when Bitcoin ran. It didn't run when Solana ran. So, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to factor that in. That's going to be part and parcel of what you're considering in the back of your mind. But also you're going to look at use cases and you're going to see, okay, where's the adoption happening? If there's a lot of adoption happening on ETH, then ETH could be potentially undervalued and there could be a greater gain there. So that's really what you're looking at. If I can, like, I know for a fact that over the next few years, as Solana adoption continues and the reward rate continues to fall in terms of like staking, the amount of token and the amount of use cases are going to end up surpassing one another. So like if there's an existing amount of token that increases at X percentage per year, but the use cases are increasing exponentially against that, then there's going to be a greater demand for fewer tokens and those tokens are going to have to rise in value. So like Solana at $80 is a steal in my opinion. I mean, I could easily see $500 or $600 Solana in the next year or two. I don't know that I could say the same for ETH. I don't know that the adoption's happening in the same manner. But again, I don't know that it matters either. So again, like it depends on the adoption and the use cases and your goals as an investor. Like some people would be happy with, you know, owning a bunch of ETH and then getting their 3% or 2.5%, you know, staking rewards and maybe 5 or 10% appreciation over the coming years, right? Some people be happy with that if it's more stable, right? Some people look at Solana and be like, oh, it went from, you know, like $8 to $280 to back to $200 to back to $250 to now it's down to $80 and be like, I'm not in for that ride. I'm not going to do that. Same thing with Bitcoin. So, you know, where your goals meet are going and what your, you know, ultimate goals are for, or where you see the particular asset that you want to invest in going is really all that matters. And if your investment thesis holds true is all that matters, right? But so past performance will taint your viewpoint to a certain extent, but really an investor is trying to look to the future, like a true investor is trying to look to the future and see where is the market going and how can I be in front of it. And so if you're basing your decisions on what previously happened, you've already lost. Like even if you're basing your decisions on what's happening today, you've already lost. You need to look into the future. And this is why I'm always harping on adoption curves, you know. So if adoption on Solana continues, there's no doubt in my mind that the price goes up. Same thing with ETH and Bitcoin. If ETH adoption continues, the price will continue to go up. Some of this will be inflation-based as well, right? The Fed's going to continue to print money. So assets with limited or no supply expansion are going to be desirable. So, you know, some of it will have to do with that as well. But adoption curves tell the whole story in my book. So what Strategy is doing with Bitcoin is very different. They've created a business where they can actually pay you an 11% return on your holdings with them through a product that they have called, I think it's called Stretch. And they're continuing to build their business around different Bitcoin products that allow them to separate the volatility from the asset. That's very high level, like super in depth and involved, and most people never understand how that works. They've done some really interesting things, and they continue to grow their business along that line. ETH isn't doing anything like that, and Solana isn't doing anything like that. But Solana is being adopted by smaller businesses and medium sized businesses, and even large businesses like credit card processors. And so, you've got Strategy doing a lot with Bitcoin. You've got the market doing a lot with Solana. I have no doubt in my mind that those two are good plays. What happens with Ethereum is really going to depend on, you know, can the foundation continue to push code that people want to use? And is that code going to exist outside of just exchanging tokens? You know, a lot of the DeFi stuff, no one's really interested in. So we'll see how that goes, and time will tell. I'm not betting on ETH right now. If it falls, I'll buy it just because I think it's a good long-term play because it was first mover. But right now I'm just looking at it as like a first mover advantage play.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, for me personally, it gets more and more difficult to make the decision to invest in ETH when the other option is Solana right now. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. And you know what decisions the Ethereum Foundation makes in the future. One more major headline I read in The Guardian, I think it was The Guardian, which titled, Donald Trump is hosting an exclusive crypto investor event tied to his meme coin Trump. I think the first, the top 297 investors were invited. I'm not sure if it took place already or if it's like today or yesterday. But it raised a lot of serious conflict of interest concerns, and of course highlights how politics and crypto are, you know, like go together, especially in the since Trump is in charge. Do you think, in general, Trump was or is still the crypto president everyone wished for with his behavior, with everything he did, considering the meme coin he dropped, the Melania coin, and do you think we would be somewhere different with what was like the alternative, Kamala, right now?
Yeah, I mean, Trump had to happen. I mean, that's just the reality. The direction the country was going with the basically everything that Trump is being accused of is exactly what the left was doing. The censorship, mm-hmm. you know, the perpetual stealing of funds from government coffers, you know, to fund crony, political cronies, insider training, like all of this stuff was going on. And then in addition to that, they were clamping down on what you could say about it. So when you look at what was going on in the marketplace, a rational person couldn't look at that and go, you know what? I think it'd be a good idea to continue in the direction that we're going. The censorship, you know, the perpetual invasion of privacy where you've got government influencing tech companies to censor this and, you know, pull that, which is what was going on, you know, all during the COVID years and the Joe Biden years and all the rest of it. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you had a bunch of communists, really, Marxists, I guess you might say, trying to take over the place. So the fact that Trump was elected was the natural consequence to anyone who understands how markets and freedom work. And this is one of the reasons that you saw all the big tech companies and the tech bros supporting the Republicans in the last election, because they were tired of it. They were just absolutely sick of being, you know, kind of pushed around and what they could do and say and how they had to interact with different government agencies. And all this came to light in a bunch of different podcasts and interviews with people like Zuckerberg and then, of course, Jack from, you know, Twitter at the time. So, you know, when it comes right down to it, Trump had to happen in order for, you know, the U.S. to even survive in any way, shape, or form. So you can like Trump, you can hate Trump. It doesn't really matter to me. But at the end of the day, a Kamala Harris presidency would have just been a puppet presidency that continued in the decline of the country and the nation. The optics of a lot of the things that are happening right now aren't good. You know, when you see people, you know, forcibly removed from a country, that's not a good optic But by the same token, it wouldn't exist had previous administrations stopped the immigration problem, right? Same thing that we're dealing with financially and economically. We wouldn't have these ridiculous tariff conversations and these ridiculous deal, quote unquote, deal conversations with foreign nations had previous presidents and congresses, you know, actually worked for the people and created laws and restrictions and proper taxation or tariff that resulted in like-kind or in-kind deals rather than one that favored foreign nations over local nations, over the U.S. You know, and you saw this ever since the Clintons. You saw this back. I mean, it's been going on forever. But, like, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Clinton years where, you know, NAFTA was signed and all of a sudden, you know, the North American Free Trade Agreement basically turned the U.S. into anything but, right? Like, you used to be able to just go into Mexico with a driver's license or go into Canada with your driver's license. You know, when that all took place, basically they took freedoms away from the people. And now all of a sudden, just to go to Mexico, you had to take your passport or you had to have a passport to get into Canada, which was, you know, unheard of at the time. And then, of course, the tariff structure that was implemented afterwards and all of the deals that were structured that favored, you know, like large corporations moving operations overseas or to cheaper districts in South America or in Eastern Asia. Like, all of this stuff, people are just sick of it. They're fed up with it, and they're tired of seeing, you know, what was once a great nation be basically crippled. So the Trump thing is just a natural consequence from the majority of people being completely fed up with the nonsense. And you saw this not only in the U.S., but in European nations, in Australia, and all across the world. So, I mean, ultimately, as much as it pains me to say, because I'm not the biggest Trump fan, you know, it was necessary. And, you know, what comes after this, we'll see. And I hope that we can sort of start looking to where we can find common ground and get back to some semblance of shared values. But when you have an influx of literally tens of millions of people who don't share your value system and who take advantage of your nation and its people, it's very difficult to get to that place. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen a lot of unrest in Europe over the same sorts of ideas. So ultimately, a nation is just a collection of ideas that people share. And, you know, being like a little kid in the 80s growing up with, you know, all of the like movies from that era and the shared narrative of that era, it felt more unified. Whereas today, like, my next door neighbor could be a completely different person from me. Like, we could maybe share completely different values, right? But, you know, I'm talking to you in Germany and we might share more common values. And for some reason, you're German and I'm American, but really we're part of the same nation in terms of how we see our value system. So I think what the internet has done and what this election has proven is that nations extend beyond borders. It's not a location. It's a group of people. And in the past, that group of people had to live together to share those values. But today, because everyone is so connected, we don't. So you and I might be on the same side of the fence when it comes to a specific issue or a specific value, but my next door neighbor might be completely foreign to me.
Yeah, good point. Good point. And I get, I mean, it sometimes feels like the United States needs like another wake up call every 4 years with another Trump term. So we'll see Trump back in 2032. But yeah, it's really interesting. But just like the question I asked was like rather like crypto related, and you know, he's having that Trump dinner with his top investors, and I know you have been an early adopter of that coin as well. Cannot forget the message you sent me early in the morning, and you were like, hey, did you buy the Trump coin? While you were already printing millions of dollars. So did you regret selling?
No, not at all. I mean, I you know, I didn't adopt anything. I just saw an opportunity because I saw what happened with his NFTs. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. I didn't answer your question. I got off on like a Trump tirade. I'm honestly sick of hearing about Trump and this and that. I'm tired of the people who like support him. And I'm also tired of the people who criticize him, because both of them are just coming from two different sides of stupid, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They're not looking at the long-term picture. So There are literally wonderful reasons to support him and wonderful reasons not to. And at the end of the day, when you're in a democracy, or at least a democratic republic, where, you know, the people who put the person in office put them there for a reason, and in this case put them there by a landslide, you have to give the guy an opportunity to do what he was put there to do. And that's regardless of party. Like, I don't care whose party you're part of, it doesn't matter. You should be rooting for your team, right? So if Joe Biden was in office or Kamala Harris was in office, I'm not going to root for America to fail because a Democrat is in office. I'm a libertarian. So for me, I always lose. There's, you know, I've never had a libertarian candidate in my entire life become president. And so, you know, I'm looking at that like as an outsider looking in. I'm like, look at both sides of the argument, people. But at the end of the day, when it comes to crypto, the Republicans have been proven to show they're more pro-crypto than the Democrats ever were, specifically with the group of people led by Elizabeth Warren and Gary Gensler, who literally tried to shut down your access to it. That to me is criminal. They've done the same thing with school choice. They've done the same thing with all kinds of freedoms, and yet they get up there and they talk about how they're the friend of the common man and how they promote freedom and this and that and the other thing when they do the exact opposite. So, you know, from my perspective, looking at it now, there's no question. It's just factually true that we are in a much better space crypto-wise because Trump is president, or any other Republican would have been president, than we would have been had, you know, Kamala Harris been basically injected into office and, you know, continued to puppeteer, you know, for all the rest of the people who basically wanted her there. She was an empty suit, just like Biden was an empty suit. And at the end of the day, I'm glad to see that neither of them were there.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like people have the tendency to forget what it felt like when these guys were in charge. I mean, you know, every week we had news from Gensler who tried to prohibit anything crypto related. And right now, it's just like the guys whose favorite crypto coin is not going through the roof who are like, oh, since Trump is in charge, everything went down. And he probably made mistakes, right? Like, if you can argue if the coin he created, you know, if he's the guy who made the most money of it, but in the end, it's your choice to invest or not. So, yeah, let's see where all this goes to.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, though, like, I get really tired of, like, of people bitching and moaning about government and money. I mean, the truth is government should have no stake in the money. Like, that's just the truth. Mm-hmm. So if you're pissed off because Trump got elected and your token went down, okay, and you're blaming him, then what you're saying is that he had the power to make it go up. That's really what you're saying. And if he had the power to make it go up, that's not a good thing, right? That's really not a good thing. You don't want a politician in position to make anything go up or down. And unfortunately, we've created a situation in the U.S. where we've never really embraced, although we're accused of being a capitalist nation and capitalism is a bad word, which is completely ridiculous. We've never actually been a capitalist nation. We've always been a mixed economy. You know, there's elements of capitalism mixed with elements of socialism. You know, we've always had a public safety net and all the rest of it. And at the end of the day, if your government is powerful enough to do bad things to you, that means they're powerful enough to do good things to you. And in both cases, wanting them to move in your direction or someone else's direction is always a bad thing. You should be able to make your own decisions and live by your own consequences, you know, to a large degree. And that, again, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't take care of people who can't take care of themselves and all the rest of it. But anything that can work for you can also work against you. And so the whole idea behind a constitutional republic was that no one branch of government had enough power to do that, that each branch of government had the ability to keep checks and balances on the other. And we've sort of abandoned that. And the more we have people parroting the same nonsense from the left or parroting the same nonsense from the right, the more we lose that. So we need good, healthy debate, whether it's crypto or NFTs or freaking ETFs or the housing market. Like, the less government you have involved in that, generally speaking, the better. But again, if we get to this place where we have this nonsense where we're calling corporatism, which is basically like, you know, corporate favors done by government instead of capitalism, where you're free to fail when you make bad decisions so that the competent people can come in and pick up the pieces and build something better. Then if we're at that place, then you lose all confidence that anything is possible for you. And I think that's where a lot of people are. They see government helping out certain people, and you see all this fraud that went on in California and Minnesota with millions and millions and millions of dollars going to like foreigners for fake businesses. You see this little fake nonsense of, you know, trying to quote unquote help the homeless get off the street, when the truth is the organizations who are receiving all the funds only get more funds if they have more homeless on the street. So all the incentives are backwards, right? So if in a capitalist system, that doesn't exist, because when you make bad decisions, you pay the price. But in a corporate system where you have the state in bed with business or in bed with these quote unquote NGOs, it's completely different. The incentives are backwards and people get rewarded anyway, which is not what capitalism is. That's not what merit is. You know, in merit, in capitalism, the best solution to the problem is the one that exists. But what we've done is we've gotten away from that. And the more problems that we create, the easier it is to sell the socialist solution. You know, just like we have Mam Dami, who was elected in New York, is going to solve all the problems, right? Well, there's so many problems, we need to have government step in and solve them. No, government just makes it worse. They always have. Government doesn't solve problems. It never has. It never will. It just enforces laws, right? And a lot of times the laws that they put on the books are bad laws. So, you know, what you're seeing in New York right now, you're going to see a lot of problems in real estate due to some of the things that Mam Dami is instituting. And we'll see how that plays out. But everybody has to learn their lesson. You know, there's no warm collectivism. You know, there's no such thing. It's just everybody's out in the cold. They're equally miserable. Or either you have a system where people are free to make their own decisions and succeed or fail based on the skill sets that they acquire.
All right. Yeah, many good points, but let's move on to topics that are a lot more interesting for us right now, away from governments into the Goodfellas. And I have done something, did I do it today? Yesterday, which I was really looking forward to. I created my own gallery, and, you know, I underestimated the part of, I remember that Mark mentioned in one of the spaces a few weeks ago that it's a lot of fun minting your pieces into your own gallery. And I didn't expect that. It's actually like, I was almost a little proud. I didn't do much because obviously your little utility tool did most of the work. But when it showed like you successfully minted the piece, I was like, yeah, I minted it. I know I did. And I was really like, it felt cool. Like it felt like, man, like now I got it. Now it's mine. I did that. It's on the blockchain right now. No one can take it from me. And that's the tool you built, Pinstripe. Tell us a little bit about the tool and the creation process.
Yeah, for sure. So Pinstripe is the first app that I released. And basically the purpose of it is to empower, you know, like personal collectors, like people who want to build their own gallery. There's been a lot in the news on CryptoX recently around, you know, like the big foundation failure, the big Black Dove Foundation acquisition that failed. And, you know, everyone needs to be concerned about their artwork and their this and that and the other thing. And there's a lot of truth to that. There's a certain amount of truth and a certain amount of, I guess you would say, discomfort that needs to be acknowledged and processed. Because the truth is, like, if you're using a third-party platform that holds a collection that you don't control, you are still at the mercy of that platform. And, you know, a lot of the posts were, you know, how do I get my stuff off? You know, how do I pin what's already there? So everyone's, you know, I saw a couple ETH devs building a little utility so people could find all their artwork and then, like, go in and pin it themselves. And, you know, because most of the ETH artwork is basically on IPFS, and if your piece is on IPFS and it's not popular or if it's not pinned, it eventually falls out of the system, right? Whereas mostly on Solana, we use Arweave, which is permanent. And so at the end of the day, if you don't have a pinning service, the artwork just kind of falls away. So collectors and creators were very worried about this. With Pinstripe, what we can do basically is go in and create a collection NFT on the Solana blockchain, and then you can create individual NFTs that you add into that collection. So the account model on Solana and the account model on ETH are very different. And with the Metaplex technology and the core NFTs, they're basically like little, they're like little containers. So you can create a collection NFT and then you can assign new assets to it. And as long as you have ownership of that collection NFT, which you will, of course, if you've minted, you have control of everything that falls beneath it. So there's this hierarchy of structure, and you can set plugins at the collection level, or you can set plugins at the asset level, which basically are then transferred to chain in every transaction going forward. So as a player in our universe, you can create a collection NFT, and you can buy artwork from different artists that goes into your collection directly. And if you want to negotiate deals with royalties or negotiate deals with selling of other pieces, you can include plugins that include all that for specific artists. So unlike a lot of NFT collections and platforms where you set the royalties at like the contract level, with this you can set plugins, royalties, control, delegation. You can set it all at the NFT level itself, which is absolutely beautiful. And it's a very incredible construction of NFTs. And one of the things that makes them much more useful outside of just being a picture, which is basically what's happening on the ETH account model. So this all allows you to basically hold control and maintain your pieces, especially the ones that you care the most about, in a gallery that can never be taken from you unless you give it up. And it's designed, you know, to basically give you full authority over all of that stuff so that, hey, this platform goes down, the other platform goes down, this platform goes up, doesn't matter. You're always protected. You always own your stuff. You have the keys to it, just like the artwork in your living room.
Yeah, and that's how collecting should be. From a technical perspective, I think you spent a lot of time creating it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Is it like, is that because, I'm not sure if you publicly spoke about the second tool you're creating right now, but is it like having some kind of code base and now building on top of it, or is it like starting all over again all the time?
Well, I mean, when you're dealing with you know, like assets, in this case, we're dealing with Metaplex NFTs and Solana. I mean, you're reusing a lot of the same ideas and the same codes and the same code base. So you can actually build on what you have in a lot of ways, right? So the interfaces that sit on top of the code that runs in the background, a lot of it can be, you know, transferred over in a lot of ways. But it all just comes down to the basic functionality of what it is that you're trying to create. So like the code that creates a collection is very similar to the code that creates an NFT, right? So you can sort of like take that code base and that idea and put it over here. The only difference is when you're creating an asset, you have the option of putting it inside a collection. Whereas when you're creating a collection NFT, you don't, because it kind of sits at the top of the tree, right? So and when things are very similar, of course, you can learn the differences and you can implement them very, very similarly, right? But when you're doing completely different things, like the other piece of code, the app that we're going to drop called Jumper, which allows you to move an NFT from one collection to another, like that's a totally different thing. And so, you know, setting that up and learning how that works and how you have to execute that is very, very different. So a lot of it doesn't translate. So it just comes down to figuring out, hey, you know, what's the basic concept here that I have to work with? And then looking at the code to see, hey, how is this possible, right? So in this particular instance where we're going to be launching Jumper, which is obviously named because you're going to be taking one piece out of a collection and moving it into another, you're jumping from one collection to the next. Basically, this has nothing to do with NFT creation, but NFT transfers. And this is not something that we've done. We're accustomed to transferring wallet to wallet. That's a no-brainer. We do that all day, every day. But we're not accustomed to moving an NFT from one collection to another collection. So if I'm a high-quality collector inside the Goodfellas universe, and you are, and you want one of my pieces, and I agree to sell it to you, I have to be able to give it to you in some way, shape, or form without me having to burn it and you having to remint it, right? So we keep the transaction on chain, we keep the provenance on chain, you can see where it comes from and all this gets logged. And that way the provenance travels with the NFT, right? So yeah, lots of really cool things. And as long as the tech continues to evolve off of the initial code base, a lot of it will translate, but a lot of it won't, depending on how different the concepts are.
Yeah, I love the products you build. I love the UI, especially because you kept it very, very simple, right? Like you don't need to really, you probably wouldn't even need a tutorial or something. I know you recorded a little video, but it's actually almost self-explaining if you visit the website, and it worked perfectly. I love, you know, to be able to finally mint pieces into my gallery, and you're reaching out to artists, and I know we have some people in the community already started creating their galleries. We got Law, we got Mark, we got I'm not sure if STC started already, but I've seen the gallery PFP you created for her. And yeah, it's really great to see. And Lucia, of course, she's spreading the word. And it's really, really cool to see. And I'd love to see more people act like this. Of course, this is right now still limited to Goodfellas bosses. And yeah, in case any one of you out there is a collector and wants to be able to create your own galleries in a very easy way, make sure to to become a boss at the boss table at the Goodfellas project, and you'll be good to go. A lot of tools to follow, I guess. I think there are many, many great things you can produce and create. And I love the idea of being able to transfer pieces from, you know, collections to different collections without having to burn and remint. This is great. And yeah, great stuff. Not sure if you've publicly spoken about Jumper already, but You'll definitely, once everything is set up, we will communicate that publicly, of course. And then what else do we have? Last year, around this time of the year, I watched a movie which is called Star Wars. I watched the first part, and I'll make it a tradition to watch one movie per year. So I'll watch the second movie this week. And not randomly, there is a special occasion coming up because we are entering May next week, and the 4th of May is usually something celebrated by Star Wars fans. And we had that little tradition of creating pieces for that occasion. And there might be a little chance that Jason is going to be creative, to get creative and does something. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We'll definitely do something for May the 4th, of course. You know, big Star Wars nerd over here. But yeah, we'll definitely do something for that. We've got a little bit of Star Wars references in the 21s already. We'll definitely do a drop for that. So look for that. And I guess we'll do probably a live mint on that as well. People who want it can pick it up. And yeah, it should be good times on Monday. And then you and I can just meet and do a podcast after. But yeah, that is coming up quick. So got to get on it. I have some ideas, but I haven't started executing. So should be fun.
One question I have to ask you personally. You said it, you're a little Star Wars nerd. So the movie I'm going to watch, I think it's five. I think I started with four, which is like the first run. If you go like from the first one that was released in the 80s, right?
77.
It was like 77. Yeah. That was like movie number four when you
episode four. Yeah. Star Wars episode four.
Movie number four.
77, okay, 78, so whatever year that was.
If I'm going to watch episode five now, how would you rank it, and within all the movies, like, is it like in the top three? Is it like one of the worst ones? Don't I need to look forward to it?
Of the first three, it's probably the best movie, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, of episode so four, five, and six. Year. Yeah, it's probably widely regarded as the best movie of the original three, for sure. Jedi is cool. Return of the Jedi, which comes after that, is pretty cool too. They did a lot of really interesting things with animation and with the visual effects. A lot of people don't know this, but a lot of the graphical tools we use today evolved out of the studio that was creating the video for this stuff. Like Photoshop came out of that studio. Photoshop only exists because they needed tools to work on the movie. And so, you know, all of this stuff evolved. A lot of the stuff that we use today in the technical world evolved from the technology that was put into these movies back in the early 80s. And when you're just a little bitty kid and you hadn't seen any of this stuff, you know, happen on screen in any form of realistic way back in that era, like, it was super cool, you know, super, super cool. And so now that, you know, all those guys have grown up and they've had kids, like, they've introduced to their kids to that stuff as well. So this lore is going to continue to grow over time. And Star Wars is one of those things, just part of pop culture that's probably never going to go away. It's just a universal story.
Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to the next movie, and I'll give you some feedback next week then. And yeah, on top of that, we got, of course, we got the Sirens coming up, hopefully at the end of May. Then we have the apps that will be published publicly. And of course, I'll keep building my galleries. Hopefully, or probably, bosses are going to keep building their galleries, reaching out to two or three artists this week. Hopefully, I'll get pieces. And yeah, that should be it for today. I think we got through. Looking forward to May the 4th, of course. And I'll publish all this in Discord. So if you want to have all those information in a nutshell, I'll post it in there in the Big News channel. And yeah, looking forward to another space on Monday. And of course, before that, we have regular spaces on Friday. And yeah, hope you have a lot of fun creating that piece. Is there anything we missed for today?
No, lots of apps planned, of course. Lots of artwork on the way. And so, yeah, keep an eyeball out for that. Just a little alpha for everybody listening. We do have the rewards program app coming out, and we will, again, like, the idea of staking at one point was cool, but it's not cool anymore. So we're not going to do like any form of staking. We're going to do a rewards program that just basically looks in your wallet to see what you're doing. And that way you don't have to put any pieces at risk. It'll just scan your wallet for what you're holding, and if it's for sale or if you or when you acquired it, and it'll give you rewards based on that. So that's coming. I'm just calling it non-staking staking. And then we'll come up with something cool for that. And then, of course, the other little app that I released that I was playing with is called Autograph. And Autograph actually allows you to put a message on an NFT. So I put links to that in the Discord. There'll be links to... Pinstripe is already there, and of course Jumper, we're testing back and forth right now, but yeah, lots more apps to come, lots more cool art to come. We're going to be updating the OG Mail art, and should have some really cool stuff visually on that as well. We've got Daria doing a great job on the female form, and we're going to elevate the game on the male form. So that's all I have from this side, my friend.
Awesome. Yeah, a lot of stuff to look forward to. And can't wait for May. May is going to be great. And yeah, we're kicking things off with the May the 4th drop. Looking forward to that. Going to get more information on Friday, of course. And until then, I hope you guys have an amazing week. End of April, of course, is coming. And I think 1st of May. Is 1st of May holiday in the United States? Because it is here.
No, we have Memorial Day at the end of May. That'll be our long weekend in May. And yeah, we'll be doing, again, this year we'll be doing the Murph workout on Memorial Day. So we got that coming up.
Oh, yeah, I remember. You do that every year. Yeah, I remember.
Every year, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
For sure.
All right, guys. So enjoy your week, and we'll see you guys on Friday Spaces. Have a great one. Bye-bye from the Goodfellas.
Take care, guys.